I was like trying to claw out of the situation I was in. So I was bringing that vibe to everything I was doing. I mean, just the essence of the goal setting I was doing was rooted in, I hate where I'm at now, so I'm gonna try and reach out to this thing in the future. So I was like treating myself like a donkey with a carrot in front of it.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. Have you ever had one of those moments when facing the reality makes you want to reach for the vodka? If the answer is yes, then you may understand how today's guest felt. Nate Rifkin had a regular morning routine of energy drinks combined with vodka because it was preferable than facing his self-hatred, career failure, and the loneliness of his life. His turning point came whilst practicing Taoist meditation while standing on a street corner in a silly costume. 6 years later, Nate is now happily married, a published author, and is using his natural talents to develop a successful career. What Nate Rifkin brings to this show is the clarity and freedom he discovered from facing the truth of his situation and using the path of inner change to empower himself to take the small steps, daily steps, required to walk the path of outer change. As a child, Nate's early life and family was not easy. It was a hostile environment. His coping system was to withdraw and shut down emotionally. As a teenager, it was expressed as anger and later depression. It left him with a distrust of people and a limited ability to connect or build meaningful relationships. He thought that going to college would change everything about him. He would make friends and meet girls. Sadly, he discovered that he brought his baggage with him and he was just as lonely as before. He chose to study health and fitness, majoring in exercise science, with a view to starting a business in the industry. But the reality of studying was more depressing than inspiring, and so he dropped out of college. His new plan was to start a business and partner with people who had the knowledge. He became inspired by writing and marketing and had a few successes, but the business side was not working and the misses were adding up. He began to run up large credit card debts and just started ignoring the bills. Despite the goal setting and the affirmations, nothing was working. He still hated himself and he was alone. And he found solace in four fingers of morning vodka topped up with energy drinks. What he did not get is goal setting was never going to work with his mindset and self-image. The point is he hated himself and it went deep and he really did not care about anything. By a stroke of good fortune, he met a mentor who was into Taoism, who explained it was a meditation technique that was developed by the ancient monks in caves. It appealed to his ego. That sounds exotic. It's like some secret knowledge. Starting with just 1 minute a day, it changed his life, and within weeks, he stopped drinking. This was the start of him feeling better about himself. And while he was feeling better, he still owed money to a lot of people, including $50,000 to the IRS. He realized he needed a day job. Looking in Craigslist, he found the perfect job that would let him listen to music all day. He became a sign spinner dressed in a foam money costume while standing on a Colorado street corner, and it paid $10 an hour. Apparently, that really works for some businesses. That job was the lowest he could go, but it was the turning point for Nate. While standing on that street corner, he was able to sort out his inner life. He took his simple Taoist meditation and turned it into a standing meditation. He started appreciating people, feeling good about them, and being zen with everything that was around him. That progression led him to take steps to change his life. He filed for bankruptcy to clear his debts. He became open-minded to the possibility of something different and realised that it was writing that held the greatest interest and passion for him. 6 years on, Nate is now married. He has written a book about his experience with Taoist meditation called The Standing Meditation, and he started his training for the Taoist priesthood. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Nate Rifkin. Nate's nice. So Nate, thank you for being here with me today. Looking forward to exploring it all with you.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
So obviously you're in the US. Where are you from, and where did it all begin for you?
Well, I was originally from Massachusetts on the East Coast of the US. And pretty much as soon as I became an adult, I moved over to Colorado to the mountains. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Dumb and Dumber. It's a pretty good American movie, but that movie actually inspired me, really. It did, to move to Colorado around the Rocky Mountains. So yeah, that's where I'm talking from today. I can see a little bit of them in the background here, actually behind my screen.
It's nice to be around mountains. I know people that live actually say, you know, I couldn't be anywhere else other than living near mountains.
Well, you know, I think it's always cool, like whatever element that we're really drawn to be able to enjoy that at least somewhat regularly.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, look, Nate, what is the journey for you? I mean, what did you start out? I mean, obviously you moved to Colorado early on, but what was the plan for you? Did you have a, like, I'm going to be this when I get big?
Yeah, I actually did. I had several of those, and they were, I mean, the farther back you go, the more ridiculous they were. I think at one point when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a tornado chaser or something after I saw a movie on that. But anyway, it all started for me, like, growing up that I was, as far as I can remember, and even later talking to my dad, he confirmed this. I was always like this really angry, kind of depressed kid. And my dad told me, he's like, even as a baby, you were kind of like that. He was like utterly perplexed. And but the thing was, I was growing up in a family that was really devoid of like love or connection. Like, these were parents who were really not equipped to raise a child. And it was a very hostile environment for me. And that's all I knew. And that's all I understood. So I coped with that by really emotionally shutting down. I became a very much angrier kid and young, like adolescent. And as I got older and became a teenager, that anger just started condensing into depression. And as I started studying like the more sort of mental and spiritual side of life, I started understanding this, but at the time I had no idea. I was just stuck in me, and I was very angry and frustrated about it. I couldn't make close friends. I didn't really get along with the other, and you know, high school is tough enough on its own, but I couldn't get a date to save my life. And I kind of thought to myself, well, when I go to college, because at least I got accepted into UMass Amherst, even though my grades were, at least if I move out and I leave and I start over around new people, different people who don't know me, they haven't known me for years, I can be a different person. I can change and have a different life. Well, I found out almost within a day of moving into a college dorm and just being around a sea of these people who they all looked like they all, you ever walk into a party and everyone's already talking in their closed circles. And you're just like, that's what it was like, both like 18,000 people. So I realized like almost instantly, it's like, I was such a fool. Like, it doesn't matter if I move somewhere else because I'm still taking all my inner stuff.
Yeah, you were carrying your baggage with you. That's the point, isn't it, really? Yeah.
So as like, I would just, can I just unload it somewhere? Can I just like, but no, I couldn't. So my kind of one glimmer of hope was like, well, I want to study like to be I don't know what I was going to be at the time, but it's like, I want to be some kind of a business owner, some kind of an entrepreneur or self-employed somehow.
So what course did you take at college?
Well, I connected that passion to health and fitness. So I majored in exercise science.
Okay.
It was funny because a lot of people were like, what do you mean? You're going to be like a coach for high school athletes or something? I was like, no, I could be like a personal trainer or something like that. So they're like, all right. So that's what I was studying. And I wasn't like making a lot of friends, and I was getting more depressed, and that leaked over to my grades because I was losing a lot of motivation to keep studying like more anatomy and physiology and stuff like that. It's like, wait, I want to create a business around this and help people. I don't think they're going to care if I know where the clavicle is or something like that. So I just started thinking about it more and more, and I realized I'm really miserable. And is a college degree really going to help me? And I couldn't come up with a good enough answer. So I dropped out. And once I dropped out, I said, okay, well, I have to take the reins on my own education here. So I am going to start studying on my own business and marketing. I'm going to start studying how to write like advertising copy and stuff like that. And I realized, you know what? I could like partner with someone who is like an expert in fitness, and I can run the business side of things, and maybe that person and I can create like products that can help people. So I actually did that. One of the people I actually worked with was my older brother, who's really into yoga, or at least at the time he was. This is going back like 15 years. And I made a go of running my own business and selling products. And it was a hit or miss success because I had some knack and talent for marketing and advertising, but I had no like foundation for business. So the misses started to add up. And I started like, you know, maxing out my personal credit card over here and paying like the monthly minimum, maxing out this one. And pretty soon I wasn't paying the monthly minimums. So I was like kind of ignoring those envelopes with the bills in them. And then eventually I was at the time also just still very alone, just still very, very depressed and growing more frustrated because all the goal setting I was doing and the visualizations and the affirmations and stuff like that, I was really trying and it wasn't working. And I started like, I just started feeling like garbage, like absolute garbage. I hated myself. And I started drinking alcohol every morning, like this much vodka. And then I poured energy drink in there too, because it's the morning.
So,
So,
yeah, for the benefit of my listeners, that's 4 inches of vodka, right? Wasn't
well, yeah, and it varied. It depended on the day. So
that?
some days maybe it was only three,
Yeah, there's still a lot of vodka to
sometimes.
have for breakfast.
Yeah. And I mean, that was my breakfast. So I was hitting a pretty low point in life. And I'd never been really a spiritual person or really reflected on that too much. And I was very kind of skeptical of all that. And I didn't really care because I just wanted to make some money, or I want to establish like myself. And I just didn't consider how a spiritual walk would help with that.
Was there any
But
passion in any of this? Because was the work you were doing, were you passionate about it in any way?
you know, I was to some regard, but I didn't zero in enough on what I was actually passionate about because I was trying to do everything. Like I loved writing, but I just considered writing to be part of the gig. And I just didn't get that maybe I could focus more on that, you know? And because I was like doing the business side of things, someone else got to be passionate about and kind of be more in the spotlight about the health and fitness aspect. So I was seeing, you could say I was seeing glimmers of passion, but they were kind of buried. And I wasn't really, I guess, knowledgeable enough to realize, hey, you know, maybe there's something to the idea of emphasizing your passion.
What is interesting is you were doing the work, you were doing the manifestation, you were doing the goal setting, you were doing all the things, but there must have been a gap somewhere in that
Yeah.
process.
There was a big gap, and I didn't get it at the time, but what the gap was, I was still coming from a place of self-hatred. And I was still coming from a place of like, I was like trying to claw out of the situation I was in. So I was bringing that vibe to everything I was doing. I mean, just the essence of the goal setting I was doing was rooted in, I hate where I'm at now, so I'm going to try and reach out to this thing in the future. So I was like treating myself like a donkey with a carrot in front of it. The carrot would just keep getting further out. And honestly, I believe it was also kind of a blessing. I was kind of meant to go through all that pain, because that's how I'd kind of learn about all this today. So what I didn't get at this time was like, I wasn't coming from a place of stillness and peace and kind of a love and regard for myself. And if I had that, I could have made every day like a day where I'm passionate about the disciplines and the processes that I can work through to eventually get what I want. And we're getting what I want is actually just would just be a natural byproduct of all of this.
But it's hard. We have to cut ourselves some slack here, because it's like, you know, in that place of despair, it's very hard to see the tunnel has a light at the end of it.
Yeah, it's impossible. Easy to look back upon. And one of the things I later learned is a great exercise is to like look back. It's like, well, think about, you know, 5 years or 10 years ago, how many times did you think this isn't going to work? This is a disaster. And then whether it imploded or not, it seems as though life kind of steered you in a way that was perfect for your fulfillment and growth. So turning that around and then looking ahead and being like, having that faith, like, okay, I'm still in that process where it's going to turn out perfect for my fulfillment and growth. Having that faith where you can affirm yourself in that. It's almost like giving yourself a psychological, like warm, fuzzy blanket, which of course can help you maintain the centered mindset in order to, yes, get what you want in the future. So it's almost like playing this, I don't want to say it's like playing a trick on yourself, but it's almost like acknowledging the game that you're in.
I get you're now in this really dark place and it's not working. Yeah. So how did you get out of it? What was the process?
Well, I had a stroke of good fortune where I was getting business and marketing advice from someone who was like selling that kind of training. And he was super into this spiritual tradition called Taoism.
Okay.
And he didn't really talk about it too much, but eventually he's, you know, a lot of the people that were learning from him were, you know, naturally also interested in personal development. Cause anyone who's in business is chances are going to be passionate about that. And rarely are they not, in my experience. So eventually he's like, well, you know what, let me tell you about this, like these cool kind of meditation practices I did. And in fact, actually, I did them when I was going from a startup in business and really just a self-funded startup. I almost went broke to where I'm at now. And it was kind of interesting because he's like, he would describe, well, they come from Taoism. And Taoism is this ancient tradition where, you know, like these people would meditate in caves or on mountaintops and become enlightened and like have these spiritual experiences. So at the time, that appealed to my ego. I was like, that's cool. That sounds like exotic. That sounds like this secret knowledge. It's like, I don't want to just do like some mindfulness practice or, you know, just sit around and like try and quiet myself. This is cool. So it was great. It like appealed to my ego. It's like, fine. So I started with like a minute per day, and I would get up in the morning. I'd, you know, go brush my teeth, take a shower. I would do a meditation, and then I would go drink. Like literally, it's like, all right, I'm done meditating. Let me go over to my kitchen, grab the bottle of vodka. Like I didn't care. But a funny thing happened. I started to feel better from meditation. I started just to feel good. I the negative looping in my mind just started to quiet down, and I wasn't trying to force it to shut off. It just did. And then I still drank every morning, but as time went on, it was like, well, I feel pretty darn good from the meditation. And then when I drink, I feel even better. I get the buzz going, but the gaps started to close between them where the drinking didn't really make me feel that much better. So one day I took a drink after meditating, and the alcohol, it didn't make me feel any better at all. It just made me feel drunk. And I thought to myself, what's going to happen as this trend continues, if it continues? Well, within like a day or two after I meditated, I took a drink of alcohol and I actually felt worse. I felt just more out of it, which could be fine when it's the end of the day and you have a glass of wine and you had a great day, but not the morning when you're trying to get up and go do something. So I stopped drinking cold turkey. That's just my experience, but I kept the bottle in my freezer and I never touched it again until I actually moved out of my condo 3 years later. And that was just to drain the bottle. So it wasn't the insight for me was it wasn't a matter of willpower. Everything I'd been doing was just about willpower. It was because I felt better about myself and I really just didn't want to drink alcohol in the morning.
So, have you now stopped alcohol altogether? Have you abstained completely, or can you touch and go it as you choose?
Well, I actually can touch and go. And it's just this is just like what works for me. Someone else, it might be different, but after several years, I was like, all right, well, let me have a glass of wine. And I was a different person. So I realized I could have a different relationship with it. So yeah, absolutely. Tonight I might have a cocktail to celebrate, talking with Paul and how well it went.
How
So
nice.
exactly.
So, I mean, it sounds like you were finding your way out of this. But so, I mean, were you still in debt with credit cards at this point and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the thing. It's like how nice it would have been, like other books I read to talk about how if you like get your spiritual side together, you'll be able to like attract all this like instant opulence and stuff like that. But no, I was still so deep in debt that even though I was getting my head together, like I was rapidly maturing at this point. And it's almost like an awakening process where you're like, wait a minute, you come to, and it's like, I really need to take care of my finances. I can't just dream of becoming a success in business without just having the basics covered. So, but by this time, debt collectors were calling me. I owed a lot to the IRS because at the end of the year, when the IRS bill came, it's like I spent that money on like food and rent. I was not living extravagantly. So I realized two things. One, I need to get a day job to cover rent and food. Like I'll keep trying to become some kind of a business owner, but I need to do both. I need to be a business owner and I need to have a day job. So that was realization number one. Realization number two was that I spent the last few years trying to make a go of this. I dropped out of college, and it wasn't like quite like within months of the 2008 like financial like meltdown that started here in the US, but it was close enough in the rear view mirror that it was not easy to find a job. That was my perception. So I'm like, well, what do I do? So I hopped on Craigslist, which is the which has a bunch of jobs listings. And it's just like accounting? No, I don't have a nursing degree. I don't have any of this stuff. So I found the category like general labor. I'm like, well, I'm a strong, healthy guy. So I actually found a job and the listing was just like full time. I was like, yes, you got me. You can listen to audios, like not audiobooks, but you can listen to music all day on your headphones. I'm like, go on. It's like, it's a job. Spinning a sign on a street corner while wearing a costume to advertise a business. I was like, this is perfect. It's like I can listen to books all day. I can keep up my self-education and get paid like enough to cover my rent and food. I'll move into the cheapest condo I can find, and I did it. And it was wonderful because it was just a job that just took my ego and just shredded it. I mean, just put it through this like cosmic paper shredder because I was standing on a street corner all day. Most people were nice, but I get people like flipping me off and screaming at me and driving by and honking their horns.
I
It was
actually can't
absurd.
believe that that kind of job is real. Does it actually work for the business?
Yeah, it really does. Because when people would come in the store, like someone in the store would ask him, how did you hear about us? And enough people said it was that goofy guy outside that they would make a note. And it's like, I mean, I started at $10 an hour. So it's like, if you get enough customers in the store to pay $10 to this guy, it really, well, I mean, eventually, I'll just give away the ending. 3 years later, the business went bankrupt. So even my dancing efforts could not fully keep that business running. I don't know what that says about me, but no, it's a real job. And I realized it, not only is it a real job, it was like a real spiritual walk for me because my world was reduced to just this silly job. I was living a life of like a lot of solitude because I didn't really have a lot of friends at this point. And I could no longer say I'm just a college age kid anymore. I was entering like my late 20s. Well, I was in my late 20s, but I was staring down 30. And I was thinking, it's like, I mean, my friends, or not my friends, but the people I knew from high school, gosh, they might be starting families by now or something. And here I am. So it was a great way to just be alone with myself and start to really reset my life and start over. Because once you're a sign spitter making $10 an hour, career-wise, the only way you got is up, unless I don't know, I guess it could get worse, but for me, that was my rock bottom. And also, well, to make the rock bottom official, I also filed for a personal bankruptcy. Because with the wage I was making, I couldn't even afford the minimum payments on my debt anymore. So I almost considered that almost like a financial baptism. It's like, I'm sorry, but I'm gonna start over. So that was kind of the
Is that a big deal? Is that a big deal in the States, financial bank, that bankruptcy like that?
Actually, I would say it's perceived as one, but it's not. I don't think it is. That's not my experience. That's not my experience with anyone who's gone through it. And I think people can look at that or start to go through it and feel a lot of shame or
Yes.
feel a lot of hopelessness or fear that's like, I'm done. Like, I'm done. But that's not true. That's absolutely not true. And I could tell you from experience, it's not. No one who matters is going to look down on you for going through a bankruptcy. And, anyone who doesn't matter. And as far as like the practical side of it, it's going to be on your credit report. But again, I can tell you from experience, like, I really think what happens is credit card companies or credit or lending agencies, they get that someone that's gone through a bankruptcy is going to go through a financial maturing process in their mind. And they've probably measured it. I mean, I would bet money they've measured it. And they
Oh,
know
they
that's like,
have.
actually, after someone goes through bankruptcy, they're a good bet. So I was getting offers to get cards and get back on my feet very quickly. So it was a blip, and it was a welcome
Well, the good thing
relief.
about it is it does set it resets the deck, doesn't it? I mean,
Yeah.
because basically all the creditors go away.
Yep. They all go away except for one, which is I don't know what the law is right now, but at the time when I went through it, if IRS debt was recent enough, within I think 2 years, it was not wiped away. So I walked out of bankruptcy court with over $50,000 still hanging over my head. Yeah.
Ouch, that's a lot of dollars.
Yep. And yeah, and if you want to go into the, I could talk all day
It's
about
all
this
right. We
stuff.
won't talk all day about it, but I mean,
Yeah, and I mean, I literally told the IRS, I'm just like, I didn't even tell them. I could show them my financial statements. I'm just like, I am too broke to pay you right now. And they said, okay, we'll give you, we'll hold off for now. We'll harass you later. So that was sort of like my financial rock bottom. But here's the thing, because I was taking care of my inner life, I was actually the happiest I'd ever been. My life was like in the toilet, but I felt good about myself. I felt good about my direction. It wasn't the destination of where I was. I was feeling good about my direction in life. And I learned that's actually worth way more.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone could have all the stuff they want, but if they're staring down a negative trajectory, they're going to be losing sleep at night. I was sleeping like a baby. And that's worth way more, I think.
So, I mean, onwards and upwards, what happened from this point? I mean, were you still working for the sign carrier having been declared bankrupt?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was like, because my mindset at the time was like, oh, I'll just do this for a few months. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Just to get back on my feet. Well, no, I was there for about two and a half years. And actually, it was interesting because I decided that if this is where I'm at, I'm still going to work on some kind of a business or at least explore being self-employed somehow.
Yeah.
Or even work my way up at the company I'm at. So I became much more flexible and open-minded, mm-hmm. which was a benefit of going through all this, because before I was very rigid about what I wanted to do. I was like, when I dropped out of college, I was burning bridges. I didn't get the loss of opportunity that caused. So I actually, at the company's yearly party, like I even approached the owner of the whole company after he'd had like, you know, a couple of beers, and asked him, you know, and I asked him, it's like, you know, I have somewhat of a marketing background. Do you think I could help out with the company's marketing? And he was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Send me a proposal. So I actually started helping with the company's like online marketing. And I had some success there. So while I was doing that, I was also networking locally, which I'd never really done before. Because I'd always thought to myself, hey, I'm a business owner. I'm just doing my thing. My job is to run advertising campaigns. I didn't realize I could just go out and talk to people and chit chat about what people are up to.
Had you moved away from the fitness business at this point?
I largely had, because it just wasn't making money. And to your first question, actually, about passion, I had lost all passion for it. That it, maybe if it were profitable, I would have stayed in it, just because it would have been sensible.
So now you were a marketing gun for hire, were you?
Yeah, I was trying to be one. I mean, within kind of the limits of my own self-image, because I'm like, well, I'm a marketing gun with who I learned a lot from my failures. So maybe that could be valuable to a company. But here's the thing, talking about passion, I still loved writing.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get how important that could be to like really match up your passion with what is lucrative. So I was learning from a few other people at the time. Like I was subscribed to a monthly coaching program about marketing and stuff like that. And I actually started to develop kind of a friendship with the guy who was running it. And his name is Dan, and he calls himself Doberman Dan because he loves Dobermans.
He's actually one of the guests on this podcast. If you look back,
you're kidding.
No, Doberman Dan's on this podcast.
That's so cool. What a small world. Well, I can tell you, I mean, if you talk to him, you know him, and I can confirm he's a great guy. Genuine guy. And I actually started learning from him a decade ago,
mm-hmm.
almost a decade ago. So he's been in this game a while. He's like in his mid-50s now. I was learning from them, and we were kind of becoming friends. And what eventually happened is I woke up one morning, and this is when the business I was assigned to before actually closed. And I got a job loading trucks, which is backbreaking, brutal labor. And I was getting really scared at this point, because I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was making $12 an hour at this point.
Oh.
And I woke up one morning, Saturday morning, and I had a funny feeling. And I went and I checked my bank account. And My account was overdrawn. And the reason it's overdrawn is because I wrote a check for who knows what, like $30 or something. And my bank account overdrew like by a few bucks. And then they hit me with those overdraft fees, and they hit me with four of them. Four. So I called them up and I said, look, I get hitting me with one fee because I overdrew, but it just happened today. I'm calling you. I'm on it. I could do something about it. Could you remove the other three? Because it's like $120 overdrawn. And I remember to this day, because they got me on the phone with like the manager, and he said, it sounds like you're going through some hard times. We're sorry. We'll remove one as a courtesy. One out of four. I actually started crying right there on the phone with him. And I said, you know, thank you, while crying. And I hung up. And I went through this snap. I went through this snap where I was sitting there with my head buried in my hands at my desk. And then all of a sudden, I'm just like, I got to do something about this. So I actually wrote a letter to Doberman Dan, a letter that I printed out. I wasn't just going to email the guy. I really wanted to make a sincere effort of getting his attention and taking me seriously. So I wrote a letter and I mailed it to him. And I said to him, I would like you to subcontract some work to me. It's like, you're the teacher. I know you've got a lot of clients or a lot of people who respect you and you're busy. Why don't you like give some of your like work to me? You know, you can get me cheap and you could, and it's win-win. You could take a bunch of the profits. So I mailed that to him. And I remember driving to, I think it was the post office. And I felt great because again, it's about the direction I was heading, not my circumstances. So he gave me a call a few days later. And the essence was, I'll see what I can do. I'll keep you in mind. I was like, all right, fine. Well, lo and behold, all these efforts I was putting in, getting to know the guy, developing a friendship with him, learning from him, mailing him that letter, none of it quite worked out the way that I envisioned. But a couple of months later, he introduced me to a company that did need like writing of advertising copy and help with their marketing. And he told them, Nate is a guy who's been listening to me and he's a guy who takes action. So if you've got a list of people that you're considering, put Nate at the top of the pile. I didn't know about this. They got in touch with me and they made me a job offer. And at this point, because I was working on that spiritual side of my life so much, I was able to like be centered throughout the process, not get too excited, not get too anxious. And I was kind of like in the zone when speaking with them. So I must have made a good enough impression because they made me an offer and I was living month to month with my condo. So I just packed up my stuff, gave the truck loading job 2 weeks notice. I was like, yeah, sorry guys, hire someone else. And I moved across the country and I started working for him. And so the long kind of story short of all that is that was about 6 years ago. And since then I've been like making a career out of writing and writing advertising copy and marketing. So I finally zeroed in on what I'm good at, which is writing. And then eventually wrote a book about the entire experience.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
And so where has your passion been throughout all of this? Is it the passion for writing is it, isn't it really? It sounds like it.
Well, it's both writing and diving deeper into the meditative practices that I started to learn. Cause like I was mentioning earlier, my former teacher, he was super into Taoism. And since like that kind of like spiritual walk helped me out so much, I got really, really, really passionate about learning more about that. And it was really sustaining me throughout this entire journey because everything else was crumbling down and changing. But my ability to kind of go deeper with one simple practice, it gave me that positive self-esteem and it gave me that confidence and it gave me like almost like a lighthouse. It would always be there shining no matter what else was crashing down upon me. So that became and is the like one of the main like in inner passions of my life. And to this day, I'm exploring as deep as I can, hence studying for the priesthood.
Do you have a Taoist teacher locally, or do you do this?
Oh, I wish locally. His name is Dr. Johnson, Dr. Jerry Allen Johnson. He's out in California, but and I haven't seen him in a while because we have the lockdowns, especially in California. Mm. But fingers crossed, this summer I get to start classes back with him and meet with him quarterly.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing when you have someone to show the way on this sort of stuff. It's the only way to do it, really. You have to have someone to show the way.
Yes, exactly. Because I spent 10 years trying to figure it out myself. And I had kind of enough knowledge to kind of muddle my way through life. And it made for a great learning experience. But it was almost like at the end of that, the spirit realm was just like, okay, Nate, you've trudged forward on your own enough. We're going to set you up with someone here.
Mm. And so you wrote the book from this journey?
Yeah. It's called the standing meditation. Cause that was a practice I did. It was actually a meditation done standing up. And it's sort of like the extended version of what I, what we've been talking about, like going from depressed to just broke, bankrupt, sign spinner to really kind of using that as an opportunity to really sort out my inner life, because I was very fortunate in that regard, where it's like, if my outer life is shrinking down to just this little, if I'm going to be scraping by on barely anything, I'm going to turn that into an asset, because at least my simple life can become an opening to explore that life from a very, very still, quiet place. I mean, it's pretty cool what you could do with like feeling and being Zen when all you do is work outside all day and then you come home alone and you got no friends. So that's what I figured out.
So have you changed your perspective in life now? Do you now make friends? Did you find that what caused that change? Did you put the case down?
Yeah. It's almost sappy, but what happened was, as I kept up my practice and working on my inner life, I actually remember it. I was standing working as a sign spinner and traffic would be droning by. And I knew I started to develop like a real love for other people. And it didn't mean I was constantly in a state of bliss or that I'd never got angry or lashed out, but there's just kind of glimmer of just like, you know, I just love people. Other people are just inherently have fondness for other people. And I realized this because people would be driving by and they're like, there'd be a car and in the passenger seat, some woman would wave and I'd wave back and I'd be like, oh, and then I'd look over and there'd be her ticked off boyfriend staring me down. And I would feel just as good about him. And that's when I realized it's like, I'm honest, something's going on here. I'm changing. And because of that interchange, people started to react to me a lot differently. All of a sudden, the people I'd run into would be nice, happy people. Mm. So yeah, I started making friends and actually what was it? 3 years ago, I met my wife. Wow. Yeah, we just celebrated our not our wedding anniversary, but our sort of like we met anniversary just several days ago, actually. So I even managed to find love. So yeah. So the social and the relationship aspect of my life transformed as well.
It is amazing though, isn't it? How it is the inner stuff that changes things.
Yeah. And as I was like to remind, I remind myself and I mention is just like, it may not happen on the schedule you want. It may not happen as quick as you want, but the journey is occurring.
I think that it's the hardest thing in this world. I mean, yeah, we're now the most connected we've ever been in life and the most disconnected.
Yeah, isn't that true? In fact, mm-hmm. And that's what I love to love that you bring that up, because I see how our relationships have been reduced to like avatars on your phone screen, or like emoticons and stuff like that. And we're missing the S. It's sort of like trying to go through life without that sort of practice that helps you achieve stillness on the inside. We're having the outer manifestations of friendship, of bonding. You know, we have the smiley faces, we have the communication, we have the networks, but because it's being facilitated through this distant array of electronics, we don't have the inner warmth of that actual bond.
I think it's deeper than that. I've had this conversation before on this podcast, probably on another podcast, but it's worth having it here. So I grew up, I'm 58 this year. And in my parents' generation, I mean, church was a thing you did. So, I mean, I wasn't a big church girl, but my mum was. And so I did go to church as a child with her. But one thing that was very obvious to me in that church is that it was a community of different people. And politics was intermixed in, and everything was intermixed in that. It was a group of people that came together for one thing, but they were all working with their differences. And I think what's happened is we've siloed our society so much. In your country, you've got two distinct parties, political parties, and never the twain shall meet. I don't suppose there's any places where they meet, even in religion, they don't probably meet.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, right on board.
And so what we've done, we've created. So there's all this like connection, but we're connecting with people that are like us. And I think we don't get the experience of being connected with someone who is not like us and learn tolerance and learn how to accept that they're different.
Yeah, it's eerie because algorithms now drive that. And it's this weird symbiotic relationship where we're going to make the effort to connect to people who are like us. And any kind of program we use is going to wall us from people who are not like us.
I make an effort to actually go and talk to some of these people, but it's so difficult. They don't make it easy.
No, you're right. And we live in the past few decades, we live in a tremendously different culture because you're right. We don't have that gathering. Like we will shop at different stores. We'll go to different schools. We'll live in different neighborhoods. Everything about our culture today is now about being walled off, and it's under the radar to most people because very rarely is it a physical wall. It's just where our attention is.
It's interesting, and I don't know the answer. I mean, I don't know. We're not going to turn the internet off. We're not going to turn the internet off, but which would be probably part of it because we'd have to get involved with local communities and things. But it's a fascinating conversation, which obviously is not really, I mean, it's just a segue, but I need to kind of focus on where we're going. But it's fascinating.
No, it is. It absolutely is.
And it's like, it's something that does need sorting because I don't think society, humanity cannot continue down this road. It won't lead to good things.
No.
It's how wars are started. It's how divides happen. And as soon as you get polarity, you get a problem. So getting back to your story, it's a fantastic story. I love it that you even found love at the end of it all, which I think is wonderful. So what was your success metric? What is your success metric now? Because I guess it must have changed. At one stage, you were chasing the dollar.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. So I judged my success on a few different pillars. One, which is the one that I was able to turn around first, was just how do I feel on the inside about myself? I mean, as soon as the switch flipped from depressed to happy, everything else became sort of gravy for me. So the second thing is that second most important thing for me was financial success. And I'm not talking about chasing the dollar. I mean, just being able to live because I actually made this decision for myself several years ago where I was a lonely guy and I'm like, I can survive without a girlfriend or a wife. I could physically survive. But at a certain point, if I don't get my act together with my career, I might not be able to survive unless I want to ask my dad to, if I can sleep on his couch. So there's an old quote that I'm going to completely butcher, But you could probably look at, maybe you know it. It's the idea. It's like, make 30 pence, spend 31, misery. Make 30 pence, spend 29, happiness. So the idea is that I judge my success where can I live a comfortable life while still being able to save and invest money? And I started this, by the way, when I was making like 300 bucks a week, and I would actually take $30 and I'd save it. And it sounded insane at the time. And some people would probably think that's not sustainable, or they would say $30 a week saved is meaningless. Well, it wasn't meaningless to me because I was proving to myself that I could get wealthy. It was $30 at a time, but hey, in my mind, that was wealth. And I would even pick up pennies that I would find on the sidewalk, and I'd put them on a mantelpiece and say, like, look, that's just found money. That's just money I found. So instead of like visualizing future riches or setting goals, I just looked at the money I had. So that became my pillar that I would judge my success upon is, can I still save and live a fun lifestyle that I enjoy? Because again, going back years before that, I learned the hard way. If you cannot sustain your lifestyle, it doesn't matter how exciting it looks on the outside. If you're not sleeping at night, you're miserable. And then the next pillar would be like the relationships I have. Like I think my wife is the most awesome, coolest person, and I'm just thrilled that she's with me. So that you could say that is how I kind of look at, leading a good life. And do I have enriching friendships? And then all of that kind of revolves around the spiritual walk that I'm taking. And am I going on a journey that excites me and that I feel fulfilled by? And do I feel like on a deep level that goes beyond emotions and beyond like my gut feeling? Do I feel like drawn to this where this is right? Like this is why I was here on earth. So if I can feel that way, I think I'm doing all right.
Interesting definitions for success. Quite deep and big, wide.
I hope so. I mean, that's cool. Hey, I just like to wake up in the morning and drink coffee. That's it,
Well, it's better than vodka, that's for sure.
Right?
So
It's straight.
what do you see as your contribution to the world?
Well, right now, the biggest one I have would be being able to be invited on show. It's going to sound like maybe a dorky cop-out answer, but being invited on to shows like yours and being able to tell this story, because I think we're at a point on like the human race at this point on this planet Earth, where kind of spirituality's out in the open, having this kind of an inner walk that affects your outer world and feeling fulfilled that way. I think it's like it's going big. It's out there. We're having open conversations about it, and I think I'm someone who has kind of a story where I had to walk this path while still maintaining this like rational, logical mind and trying to like put these two together. And I think being able to help others along, it's like, no, this is how it worked for me. It actually worked out really well. I think that is the biggest contribution I can make. So that's, I mean, I took 3 years to like write the book because I really wanted to be a craftsman, a craftsperson about putting the book together and doing such a great job that I could, anyone who picks it up or buys it, I would feel good and like, you know what? Maybe it won't resonate with them. Maybe they won't get the results that I did or anything close. But I know enough people are going to be like, this thing's pretty cool that I'm going to do some good that way. So right now, what I'm doing with you and with the book is exactly my contribution.
Great contribution. I think that's true, and I think anyone sharing a story, you've only got to change one life, and it's been worth doing.
Yeah,
No, that's it.
exactly. Exactly. So,
So, what is the one question you want people to ask of themselves, or what is the one question you want people to ask you?
I'll start with themselves, and I'm completely and utterly gonna borrow a question from someone I know. His name's Jim Anderson, and he changed his life by asking himself questions. So the ultimate question he had asked himself was, how is this perfect for me right now? So if people could ask themselves that, and by the way, something being perfect for you doesn't mean you have to like it, doesn't mean you have to enjoy it, but how is it perfect for you? Maybe it's perfect for your growth or development. If people could ask themselves that question, if I could have asked myself that question 15 years ago, we'd all be in a really great spot to grow and learn and develop like we really want to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so what is the one question that you want people to ask you?
I think you already did. Everything she's asked has been really good, but honestly, it would probably be a question like, what was that foundational practice? Or what was the foundation? What was the one thing that turned things around for you? Because I can talk about hard work. I can talk about forming a relationship with someone that ultimately helped me. I can talk about all that. But for me, it really came back to that one spiritual discipline that enabled me to transform my self-esteem.
What is that discipline? Can you just say what it is?
Oh, well, the discipline was doing a meditation practice and starting with 60 seconds per day. And I added like 5 seconds a day and I built that habit. So it was a meditative practice that comes from Taoism where, it's super simple. It's tough to do, but simple. You stand and you relax and you quiet your mind and you focus on breathing into your belly. And as you breathe deeper, you relax more. And as you relax more, your mind quiets. And as your mind quiets, you can breathe deeper. And just by doing that daily, first thing when I got up in the morning, that was enough to make me feel better. And it was like a snowball. The feeling better caused me to wake up to my financial situation and caused me to not need to drink alcohol, which then caused me to be able to start a career, which gave me the discipline and the patience to be able to see that through so I could actually build a decent financial foundation so that I could feel better about
myself. That was a pivotal point for you, wasn't it, really?
So the answer to your question would be, I would encourage everyone to find that pivotal discipline. It has to be a discipline for them and to do it every single day and to cling to it like a lighthouse.
I find the one thing I find that people don't ask themselves the right questions or enough questions. They don't actually... not enough people take the time to really understand what they want or need.
Yeah, it's...
And I know it's difficult. Never, yeah. It's not easy. I appreciate it. There's not enough time. We're so caught up in the day-to-day, da-da-da-da. But if anyone asks about, like, what would your perfect day look like? I mean, very few people actually turn around and say what it is.
My perfect day? My perfect day is one where I get a good night's sleep. And I learned this actually when I was working as a science spinner. It's like when I get a good night's sleep and then I have a good cup of coffee, life's actually pretty good. If I neglect those, there's not a whole lot that can replace that. So my perfect day starts with getting a good night's sleep. And whatever that entails, I mean, think of all that entails. That would mean you have to be free of a lot of worries. Your life doesn't have to be perfect, but you have to be master over your major worries. You have to be healthy enough to be able to sleep through the night. And then getting up in the morning and doing some kind of a meditative practice, drinking coffee, or actually these days it's more tea for me. And then writing. And then writing something that it's fun to write because I love writing about all the weird adventures I went through. It's just, I'm so selfish. I just love it. It's like, oh, I get to talk about being a science fitter. Yeah, sure. I'll do that. And it's something that's going to help connect with someone so that they're open enough to be able to listen to me prattle about spiritual development. And then getting to hang out here in my house. And my wife is the best cook in the world. So getting to hang out with her and joke around while she cooks something and then eating that. I don't want much more than that.
Sometimes the simplest things are the best things, you know.
Yeah, I've rarely heard, I love those complicated things.
So, Nate, if people want to get in touch with you, what's the process? What do they want to, what are you looking for?
Well, I have a website, naterifkin.com, and I post articles on there. I love to write, so that's where I like frequently post articles. And my book is on Amazon, so like Amazon UK, thestandingmeditation.com, and
Wonderful.
I also have the website thestandingmeditation.com, which I think just forwards to Amazon at this point.
Okay.
And
Are you
that's
on
where people
LinkedIn and Facebook and the usual places?
actually just LinkedIn. I'm Like we talked about earlier, I'm not much of a social media guy. So I just focus on my website and writing stuff like my book.
Wonderful,
Yeah.
wonderful. So those links will be on the website Life, Passion, and Business on Nate's podcast. On Nate's podcast, they do sometimes. They are also on the apps, but I also noticed that the podcast apps seem to have stopped making them live. So sometimes it's a bit easier just to go to the website and pick them up from there. So please check out Nate's book because it is worth a read.
Thank you, Paul. This has been amazing.
So our final question that we ask all of our guests, and it's that one question that is, I don't know, everyone has their answer for it, and sometimes people never even bother finding an answer. But for you, what is the meaning of life?
Oh, that's a heavy question. I love it. It reminds me of one of my teacher, actually Dr. Johnson, who said, "We're not here to shop. We're here to change and die." And what he meant by death is actually a spiritual death. The idea is that at the end of your life, you want to be standing atop a pile of the old bodies of you. It was the you that had self-doubts. It was the you that would be reactive. It was the you that was not doing what he, she, they was really passionate about. And you want to have left all those behind to be the best you can be, because that's your contribution to the world. So that's like what the Taoists would regard as the meaning of life, is like we are in the arena to grow, change, and die. And by walking a spiritual path and helping others, that's how we do it.
Sounds good to me. Sounds great. So, Nate Riskin, thank you so much for sharing your Taoist wisdom with me and everything else that's connected with that. And maybe we'll talk again sometime. Who knows?
Well, thank you, Paul. It's been an honor, and I'd love to.
Maybe when you do the next book.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nate. All the best.
And that was Life, Passion, and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Nate Rifkin. So you can find Nate's book at the website, thestandingmeditation.com. You can also find more details about Nate at naterifkin.com, and you can also find him on LinkedIn. All of those links are available at the podcast app, and you can also find them at the website lifepassionandbusiness.com. If you are interested in the Doberman Dan conversation, you can find that under the listener's choice. And while you're there, do check out the latest shortcast about approval. Who do you seek approval from? It's a fascinating story, that one. Do check it out. And while you're also there, you can look at the resources tab where there are loads of other items that would be supportive for you and your journey. If you've enjoyed this podcast, if you have enjoyed any podcast, please remember to like, share, and follow, because that supports the algorithm and it helps people like you find good podcasts. So that's it for me. Thank you so much for your time and attention, and I'll catch you later. All the best.